Why is it so hard to create a good brand? Hey, welcome to Growing a Fruitful Brand, where we discuss how to create and grow a brand that makes the world a better place for you, your customers, and your employees. I'm Ben Luters, founder and art director of Fruitful Design and Strategy, and this is my business partner and brand strategist, Raj Lula. And today, we're talking about branding. And brand seems to be in the news a lot lately. Has there been anything happening, you know, in your spheres in the world of branding lately?
I mean, there's definitely not a giant dumpster fire going on over a brand that was formerly a bird and is now just the letter X.
Formerly Twitter. Yeah, a lot of people are saying that Elon might have just wasted $44 billion in brand value with switching from the bird to the X. But it's more than just the logo, right? I mean, it's in like the vernacular of like the American experience.
Yeah, I mean, you know, so many tech companies want to become a verb, you know, like Google it, Venmo it to me, and tweet had become a verb, and now nobody knows. Did I just X a thought out? Like, how do I?
That seems like it could be fraught with issues. Yeah. Like, it doesn't just roll off the tongue. You know, I've seen some people say that, you know, he knew exactly what he was doing, Elon did, and he's the brand and he gets it. Maybe so. This is a very complicated issue, and we might do a whole episode on this. Very certainly, we probably will. Yeah. All this to say, it seems to be hard to create a good brand.
Yeah, I mean, Threads just launched too, and there was a lot of initial hype. 100 million people joined faster than any other platform ever, including ChatGPT. And so it's like, oh, okay, wow, these guys have it. And then, of course, usership plummeted pretty immediately. Now, Zuckerberg says that he knew that this was going to happen. And I actually believe him because the way that they had people sign up for Threads was just click a button from your Instagram. I had a Threads account sort of before I realized it. It was just like, I was just following buttons and I just was curious enough to go find
it. It's nice when you own like three other social media channels. Rolling out another social media channel, it gets to be a little easier.
Yeah, I mean, Facebook just passed 3 billion users. And so, it's a little easier to get to 100 million when you start on a third and a half base.
I'm just waiting for Zuckerberg to change the name of Facebook to Z or something like that. That's going to be really interesting.
X versus Z. Well, I think the billionaires have gotten enough free press from us today. Talking about this, even for billionaires, creating a good brand is hard.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of reasons for that. The biggest part for me, I think, is that brands are multifaceted. Mm. You know, when people come to us and they say, you know, hey, can you make a logo for me? Mm. You and I both kind of cringe a little bit because we know that that's not actually what we do for people.
Right.
It's so much bigger. It's helping them create the foundation for their brand. It almost interchangeable with the word company because that's how important it is. It consists of your entire reputation across a number of places. So that's what really what we're going to dig into today is kind of the core areas of a brand. Why is it so hard to be good at all of them? And what makes the difference between brands, companies who get this right and ones who don't?
Yeah, that's really good. I especially like how you said, you know, when you say brand, we're not just talking about a logo because, you know, when we call ourselves Growing a Fruitful Brand, we talk about all aspects of the business and, you know, and these things really need to be thought out. So let's dive into it.
Really, it comes down to these five things, and we'll go through them in depth. Product, value, experience, messaging, and look and feel. And again, some people might combine some of these things. They might split them out a little bit differently, but you have to nail all five of these things in order to have a truly great brand.
Yeah, and feel free to drop a comment or send us a message if you think it should be cut up a different way.
Yes,
or
argue
if you
would with us.
Yeah, argue. It'd be interesting to hear because it, you know, it does definitely include these things, but you know, the way that you cut it up could be different depending.
Yeah. So let's just start with your product. You know, just a simple question to ask yourself is, does this good or service do what it's supposed to do? Mm. Might seem super obvious, but this is part of where, you know, we wouldn't brand certain companies.
Sure.
You know, there's those crypto scams out there that you constantly get hit with on, you know, on social media. And it's
on
like
X.
I'm sure they have a lot of money that they're stealing from old people and children. And and so we don't want to be a part of that. We don't want to help platform and give a foundation to a company, a brand that is disreputable.
Yeah, casinos, you know, lottery, some of those things.
Yeah, we talk about, you know, we don't brand what we would call vice businesses.
Right.
And it's not to say that those places don't have a right to exist or whatever. That's not our judgment to make. It's just that we know that we can't do our best work in helping create a foundation for those places because we don't fundamentally believe that the product is good for us or other people.
Yeah, it's in what we say every week here about, you know, making the world a better place.
Yeah.
You know, it's, you know, growing a fruitful brand for it to be truly fruitful in our eyes, you know, it's got to be doing good in the world. And that can be subjective, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, we get to be subjective.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that that's actually a great place to kind of start is if you're looking for a branding agency, you know, a lot of people think, well, they're a provider, and so if I've got the dollars, they should serve me.
Yeah.
But because brand is so much bigger than just the creation of a logo or some messaging, and it goes into all of these other areas, you're actually bringing about 50% or so to the branding conversation.
Right.
You've already got the product, the value experience, that stuff already locked down, or at least in progress. And if it's not a good fit for your branding agency, they should know that and they should be honest with you about it. There are certain businesses and organizations we don't work with. There are some businesses and organizations we work really great with.
Well, and on the flip side, I think there's a lot of organizations out there that wouldn't work with us because we're just not the right fit too. It's kind of a matchmaking service a bit there that you want to find a branding agency that you align with in your values and your work. This is why everyone's always interested to see who are some of your past you know, clients. Who are some of the you know, have you done anything kind of like this? You always hear
that. Do you
have
experiences in industry?
It's like, oh, I have a nonprofit that has this kind of a, you know, specific kind of bent. Have you done anything like that before? And they kind of want to see, they don't expect you to have done work exactly like their thing, but they just want to make sure that, like, you know, we would be a good fit, that you kind of understand this world in some way.
Yep.
And so that's why, you know, you see a lot of people kind of niching down in industries because, and along ideologies or values, because those kind of people just kind of get those kind of people and they work well together. And there are maybe even some good, you know, organizations and things out in the world that maybe we still wouldn't necessarily be the best fit for just because of just how our makeup is, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And even just the types of things that those clients want or expect. And even in terms of, you know, communication, all those things, like there's a certain rhythm back and forth, a relationship that you want to have.
Exactly.
So moving from product. So product's number one, do you actually have a good or service? Let's start there. Does it do what it's supposed to do? Then that goes very naturally into value. Value asks the question, does this solve the problem for the right price? You know, we were talking about how there's these services that you pay for that you kind of roll your eyes at. And there's no offense to these industries at all, but it's just that it feels expensive for what it is. You know, so the one that comes to mind for me is a plumber, you know, where the you know, somebody comes into your house and they
just tighten one thing.
No, well, they a lot of times they'll crawl under your sink or you know, go in whatever room has the problem. They look at it and they come back and, okay, that's going to be $500. And you go, I mean, it has to be done. And so you kind of reluctantly, begrudgingly do it. And, you know, don't get me wrong. There are ways even in those industries to improve the sense of value. You know, the folks who put the little like shoe covers on as soon as they come into your house so that they don't track mud through your house or dirt or whatever. You know, during the pandemic, people who would call you in advance and ask you if you wanted to wear a mask in your house, like those types of things. You can, even in those industries where people begrudgingly pay for it, you can improve the value that you feel like you're getting, showing up on time, giving people a more reasonable window of time. So it's going to be between April and June, you know, it's like, okay, well, that doesn't feel great.
In daytime or nighttime, possibly, you know, hours.
And so, but yeah, asking this question of value of, you know, does it feel like it solves the problem for less than you would have paid to solve solve it. You know, so you know, it, therapy, for example, at $100 an hour, you might feel like, ugh, that's expensive. But if you if it keeps you from quitting your job and losing $100,000 a year,
right,
then man, $100 an hour seems cheap at that point, especially if it's only once a week, you know, or once a month. It's like, okay, well, that $1,200 I spent this year was worth $100,000. And when you multiply that over, you know, interest on your savings and longevity of your career, selling your business, all of those things, that $100 a month might be worth literally millions and becomes so, so worth it. So, you know, your brand is a combination, you know, a product, but then also the value that it feels like that product or service is worth. Then we get into experience. And again, all of these are interrelated for sure. And experience comes in two spots. It's both before purchase and after purchase, pre-purchase, post-purchase. And that's easy to kind of think of as maybe sales and marketing and then fulfillment and follow-up. But from the beginning, you know, we think about brand a lot as before you've even entered the room, what do people think of you? That's that sort of that pre-purchase identity, reputation piece of it. But then also, what's your website like? How easy is it to schedule a call or add to cart or any of those things? That's all pre-purchase. You are creating the experience for them before they are even doing business with you. In fact, a lot of the new research on purchases say that people do 70% of their research on you before ever reaching out to you. So they are almost ready to purchase. You know, we talk about funnels all the time. They're already three quarters of the way down the funnel before you even hear from them for the first time. That's what most research is saying now.
So crazy.
And so that puts a lot of emphasis on your pre-purchase experience. Is your website good? Is it accessible? Is it, you know, responsive on mobile phones? All of those things. Does it? And then we'll get into look and feel in a minute. But, you know, is it attractive to people? How did they hear about you? You know, who was, did somebody recommend them to you? All of those things are all part of your brand. And you do have an amount of control over those things, you know, of whether people recommend you or not.
Well, and I think one of the things that comes to mind when you think about these two aspects of experience, pre-purchase and post-purchase, the goal is that both of those are equally awesome. The goal is that the pre-purchase, you know, the level of experience in the pre-purchase phase matches post-purchase, or maybe post-purchase even exceeds, you know, what you got in the pre-purchase. And I think it is really, it can be really easy for us to focus on one of those and neglect the other. Some people are better at, you know, the sales and marketing, but as far as, you know, client retention and follow-up and all that kind of stuff, things can fall apart. And so that's super important to keep in mind. You know, you may have a great, you know, sales team or a great marketing partner, but you don't know what to do with people once you get them. And that's a huge experience problem, because if you're really, really good on the front end and then really disappointing on, like, you're not going to get repeat business.
And it
kind of destroys, it feels like you made a promise with the experience on one hand and then you like let them down. You know,
and the opposite happens a lot too, where your customer service, your product, your experience is really great, but people have no way to find you because you don't have a website, or your website is terrible to work with. And then you feel like you're a really well-kept secret, and you don't want to be a well-kept secret when you're a business.
We see a lot of people that fall into that category.
And so if you are, if you're struggling with the first thing that Ben was talking about, where your sales and marketing team is great, and then, you know, you fumble with onboarding or with, you know, delivering on time or any of those kinds of things, then it's helpful for you to think of your onboarding as part of your marketing process. Like, if you've got marketing nailed down, then think of onboarding as the last part of the marketing process. And then if your team can't handle it from there, then, you know, maybe make some changes. But if you... if the opposite problem is true, if you have great customer service, but your sales and marketing are lacking, then think of the pre-purchase experience as pre-customer service. You know, just if you have a great customer service culture, then just kind of copy and paste that ethos, that passion into the front part of the experience. So you might even work backwards from onboarding. Hey, we onboard clients really great once we finally get them. So cool. How can we go one step before that? How can we make it easy for them to schedule that call? Or how can we make it easy for them to just add to cart? You wouldn't believe, I mean, we would unfortunately, but how hard it is for some places for you to give them money.
Oh,
even
yeah.
just the, you know, I was at the doctor's office the other day and they're like, there's a sign on the counter that says copay is due at the time of appointment. So I got my card out and they go, our card machine is down. It's like, and that wasn't their fault, but it was, but I mean, how many places are they, you know, it's like you have some sort of electronic payment checkout thing on your website that's really sketchy. Mm-hmm. And my friend Dave Miller talks about how he's like, there are some, you know, charities that I will donate to where I just assume that my credit card details are going to be stolen because the website's so sketchy. And it's like,
that's well, a great feeling.
We didn't want to pay the PayPal fee or we didn't want to pay the Stripe right. or whatever. And it's like, be standard with that stuff. It's worth every penny. There's yeah. a reason these companies are huge and growing. It's because
trust.
People want to have that confidence that when they swipe their credit card, it's not going to be stolen. So pre-purchase, post-purchase, huge parts of the experience. And post-purchase, you know, just one note about that is that's where you have an opportunity to influence whether or not people recommend you to other people.
Mm-hmm.
When you finish well and then ask for a referral is a huge, huge thing. If you've served them really well, then they're going to have this huge rush of, you know, dopamine, endorphins, whatever, depending on what your product is. And that's the right time to, you know, to ask them, hey, would you leave us a review? Would you refer us to someone? Mm-hmm. I remember talking to, you know, Summer, the owner of Trio Salon, and she was talking about how, you know, the best time to get a review is when you've just like massaged somebody's head. They feel great. They, you know, the for us, it's like the beard's all trimmed down and not, you know, not looking all scraggly. And it's like that person feels great at that moment. Don't wait yeah. until, you know, they've showered and 2 weeks later they've can't figure out how to make it look as good as it did in the salon.
They found the part that you missed.
Not at Trios. but you know, don't wait until they've kind of ruined the product for you to, and yeah. then send them an email in 2 weeks and be like, oh, by the way, I hope you had a great time at your appointment. Leave us a review. Ask yeah. them while they're in the chair. Say, and so we made little signs for them that had QR codes or whatever to get them to the reviews as quickly as possible. And it helped. It was huge.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked about product. We've talked about value. We've talked about experience. Let's get into messaging.
So people buy your product because of the words you say. I know that it feels like in a world of social media and video and TikTok, all these things that it's like, oh, we have to grab people's attention in these creative ways and we have to dance and all these things. But at the end of the day, people buy your product because of the words you say or write, whatever they read or hear from you. That's what helps them make that purchasing decision. Again, they make 70% of their purchasing decision before they even talk to you. And I promise it's not because of how good of a dancer you are on TikTok for the most part, unless you're selling dance lessons. And then in that case, they still need to know how much it costs, how they can get them, right. all those things. People buy your product because of the words that you say. Now, we're a story brand certified agency. We really truly believe in positioning your customer as the hero of the story and positioning yourself as the guide. It's so often that we get so excited about our thing, our process, that we dive into that first. We don't bother explaining the problem that the customer has and how this is a solution to that. And we do that at our own peril. We throw away sales when we start talking about the features before we've even helped the customer identify that they're even in the right place. If you thought about, you know, walking into a great retail store or a restaurant, and all of them, all the good ones, they welcome you when you come in.
Mm-hmm.
And now do not put the word welcome at the top of your website. So many people do that. is a huge waste of space. No, what you should do is welcome them with an identity, with a word, with an aspiration that says something like, do you want to feel better? Do you want to grow your business? Do you want to, drive the car of your dreams? Words like that that help people identify, oh, I'm in the right place. I've been welcomed into this place because they already knew that I was going to be here. It's like when Darcy on our team used to run a Barnes & Noble cafe, and she had regulars whose orders were taped to the register, and even their membership number was taped to the register, so that as soon as that person walked in, their drink was being made, and they were already rung up by the time the person hit the counter. What an amazing experience that is. We were anticipating you being here. You come here every day. We know what you're going to order. And we know the kind of day you want to have. We can make that much easier. Mm. That's what your words do for people on your website. Mm. But those words are only effective if they are encompassed in a look and feel that they can identify with.
Oh, now we get to the best part.
You've been waiting this whole time for your favorite part. Let's talk about look and feel for a minute.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there's some, negative connotations around it sometimes. So people think that, hey, if I got all these other things working, isn't that just kind of like a vanity play to make it look a certain way, and especially invest a lot of money in like making a nice logo and a color palette and that kind of stuff. It's like what really matters is the product that we deliver, or et cetera. But look and feel, it's interesting. It goes way beyond just again the color palette and textures and things like that. I mean, it can get all the way down to we have a client that we're working with right now who their clients don't know how to pronounce their name. They love their service, but they can't say the name because it's just very hard to pronounce. A made up word that just doesn't roll off the tongue, and it kind of looks like another company's name. It's just a really complicated thing. But that gets to the look and feel. That's not just obviously we're gonna make a great logo for them, but it gets down to we want your company to be something that people love to say. Yeah. To have it be able to become a verb like Twitter used to be, tweeting used to be, that maybe that name's available now. Maybe that's their new name. And so those kinds of choices really matter, because, in that case, you want people talking about you, yeah, right? You're only going to be as successful as people being willing to share. People can't share and be excited about you if they don't know how to, how to say your name. And so those kinds of things really do matter a lot. And, we are humans, and it matters how certain things, just feel, the feeling that we get when we're around them, through just, type choice, the style of an icon or a symbol, those kinds of things, even a color palette. A certain these feelings are evoked, and we can feel safe, we can feel heard, we can feel feelings of joy and stuff like that, all just through these very seemingly irrelevant things, but they're deeply, deeply relevant. Can you imagine if we lived in kind of a black and white world where there was no color? There are certain colors that just evoke certain emotions and feelings, and we can use those to our advantage, not in a manipulative way, but in a way that, enhances our value, enhances our experience, enhances our product, and matches those things. So a lot of times what we like to say is you've got a great product, you've got a great thing that you're wanting to do in the world. We can help create a look and feel that matches that.
It introduces people to the experience.
Exactly, exactly. Because that's the Raj said it in an earlier point, but with look and feel, you have the ability to attract too. To here's it. You're doing a great thing in the world with an amazing name and a memorable logo and symbol and, you know, color palette, illustration, photography choices, video, like all that stuff. You have a way to kind of attract and get people's attention. And it really is, you know, about attention. But again, not in a, you know, I keep saying it, but not in this kind of vanity kind of metric way, but in a way that conveys the truth of who you really are.
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of examples of this, right? Where, like, if Apple computers, instead of having a sleek, you know, metallic Apple on the back of a laptop, yeah, Ben's showing his off here on the video. You know, if instead it was that chalk font that kindergartners use or that kindergarten
that
teachers
would be
use,
nice. Like, yeah,
and it just said Apple on the back. I mean, people would be so fast to get a laptop cover if they even bought the product, you know. But yeah, like, if so, assuming the computers were still as good as they were, people buy laptop covers. They'd be putting stickers all over this thing to just get away from the embarrassment of, like, yeah, I'm in a professional meeting in a boardroom with a chalk font on my on the back, right, of my machine. It just doesn't feel right.
Right.
But it also goes the other way too, where you know, if Walmart's logo looked like Rolex or Bugatti or something, or Bulgari, you know, people who are value shoppers or budget shoppers wouldn't even step foot inside.
Right.
You know, if there was valet parking in front of Walmart, you know, people would be like, "Oh, I think I'm in the wrong spot. I was looking for, like, cheap toothbrushes here."
That's a really good point, though, because, like, yeah, it kind of gets to that point of you want it to kind of match and support the value and the experience in the product, because you're right. Like, some products are not as premium. Some experiences aren't, and intentionally so. We've talked about that on other podcasts, but it's like, you know, you want your brand, the look and feel of your company, to convey, to kind of, it's a little bit of a promise of, like, here's what your experience is probably going to feel like too.
Yeah. Well, you know? And so, yeah, take Walmart, for example, still. There's still a high level of consistency in their branding.
Oh, yeah.
Across, you know, what the checkout looks like, what, mm-hmm, you know, the uniforms workers wear, signage, all those things, even, you know, signage outside in the parking lot, all of those. And I know we talk about it a lot as being, like, the cheapest thing, but it's not actually the cheapest thing. The thing below that is, like, the flea market that has taped up signs on poles, you know. Like, there are marketplaces below Walmart in terms of cost. But Walmart's commitment to consistency in their branding, it helps you know that, hey, most likely it's going to be in stock. The truck isn't going to be late, and you're not going to have some, you know, a person behind the desk being like, I don't know, the truck will get here when the truck gets here. Mm-hmm. Whereas in a, you know, whether it's a flea market or whatever kind of other environment where it's like, hey, man, like, there's a taped up pole here. This was a parking lot 8 minutes ago. What do you expect from us?
Right.
Like, you can't come here and expect to get dog food and toothbrush and, you know, some groceries for the week.
You can't expect to maybe haggle on prices
and oil
and
for
stuff.
Your car. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, like, there's the, you know, perks to that world.
It's a different thing.
Right.
And so, like, even in their branding, it conveys the dependability of the brand, even if it's doing it at a price point that's lower. It's got the little smiley face that tells you, hey, prices are low here. That's great. Apple would not be caught dead with the smiley face in their window of, like, hey, we cut our prices. Like, no, it's not.
Yeah, that's like the opposite of their brand.
Yeah. Right. And so it's not just about, you know, this only works for luxury brands, or you have to, or if you're, you know, planning on selling at a higher and higher margin. It's really about what look and feel is really about is it's about building community. Mm-hmm. It's showing people, hey, again, you're in the right place. We're saying the words that tell you you're in the right place. And then we're doing all of the other nonverbal signals,
right,
that whether it's our imagery, whether it's our, you know, logo, our fonts, colors, all those things that show people that you are in the right place. And we're here to take care of you. So just to wrap up, we talked about your brand consists of your product, the value you provide, the experience that people have, the way that you're talking about that experience with the messaging, and the look and feel. Those things are all really, really important. And while we as a branding agency love to create brands or rebrand, We know that we only bring about 50% of that equation to the table.
Right.
We can help give you the foundation for your brand, but you bring the other 50%, maybe more, to the table with your customer service, with your sales, with your product. And it's not enough to just have a great logo and a great message. It also does need to be a great product, a great experience, which is why even billionaires struggle to create great brands. It is difficult to do. And those of you who are out there doing it, keep going. The world needs great brands. They need great people like you who are proud of their work, who are telling their customer stories, who are entering their customer stories as a guide to solve their problems. Keep going. It's hard work and it's well worth doing.
If you do feel like you are, you know, you've got a great product, got a great thing going, but you are kind of this, you know, best kept secret kind of a thing, and you don't feel like your look and feel or your messaging, you know, are really helping you get that out into the world in an attractive and in a you know, cohesive way. That is what we do. You know, I mean, like, shamelessly, like, you know, that we love bringing, you know, that part of an equation to help people, you know, get that message out there in a way that connects them with the right community.
Yeah. And I will say too, sometimes that piece of the process is the tail that wags the dog. When you sit down and you think about your customer story and how you enter into that, sometimes it gives you a little light bulb moment where you go, oh, our onboarding should be better. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, when you ask, what is this button on the website going to do? And it's like, well, it's going to schedule a call with our customer service team. Can people actually schedule a call, or are they just requesting a call? Oh man, it would be great if they could schedule a call directly from the website. Right. Cool. We need Calendly. We need HubSpot. We need some kind of service that allows our customer services team to be their calendars to be directly schedulable on the website. That's great. Sometimes going through the process right. helps you actually improve the other parts of your brand.
Exactly.
It's a lot of it's just about caring enough to do it.
Yeah.
In order to help you with that, we're going to put together a brand worksheet. It's going to be attached to the blog post that we post a summary post for every episode that we do. And the link will be in the show notes. But that brand worksheet is just going to take you through all five of those areas that we talked about today: product, value, experience, messaging, look and feel. And it's just going to give you a strengths and weaknesses chart. You could do it yourself if you wanted to, but we're going to have our wonderful design team put together a worksheet for you. And you can just sit there and work on it and think through, really, truly try to think of it from, I've never heard of this company before. You know, how I'm experiencing it for the first time. Do I understand the product is going to solve the problem? Is it going to be at a price point that is worth it? How's the experience from getting from never having heard of this all the way through telling my friends about it? Is the messaging clear? Is the look and feel, the website, the brand, all that up to date? Does it compete with our competitors? Does it outshine our competitors? Is it a little bit below our competitors? Is it living up to our own aspirations? Maybe it's not even our competitors. Maybe all of our competitors have bad stuff, but we want to be the Apple of plumbing or whatever. It's just going to be a great opportunity for you to sit down, work through this. And whether it's about look and feel and messaging or not, we'd love to know, you know, what that surfaces in you. And feel free to reach out to us and we'll give you any recommendations. If you say, hey, we're weak in this area, who can you connect us with even that who's great with training a sales or customer service team or helping with product? We know people in all of these areas because we work with them all the time. So we'd be happy to help you in any way build your brand, because we're all about helping you grow a brand that's good for the world, good for your employees, good for yourself. And that's what makes businesses work.
Thanks for joining us today on Growing a Fruitful Brand. If you found today's show helpful, don't forget to subscribe and consider sharing it with someone who might also enjoy it.
If you'd like to work with Fruitful on a branding, website, or messaging project of your own, you can always reach out on our website, fruitful.design.
But until next time, don't forget to grow something good.